nature which may offend some members of the audience. The views expressed reflect those of the speaker only and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KZSC or the UC Regents. Anyone who prefers not to hear this type of material should tune out KZSC for the next hour and join us later.
Tonight's guests on Earthbeat are Brian Koepke. Brian has been a longtime activist in the community. He used to be employed by groups such as Greenpeace and the Nuclear Weapons Freeze Office. He's currently unemployed and homeless. And we have longtime homeless advocate Jane Immler. Jane drew a lot of attention a few years ago when she did a hunger strike to get the local government to respond to the crisis of the homeless people. And so they'll be talking about these issues. Welcome to Earthbeat.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, to start off with, Jane, in brief, how did you get involved? How long ago was that when you started being a homeless activist?
Okay, well, first of all, let me apologize for my voice. Our daughter got married yesterday in St. Louis, and I guess this is the after effects. But my work with the homeless originally started down in Los Angeles. And it was while I was marching with the groups to keep the United States out of El Salvador in the early 1980s that I began to notice this aberration of people sleeping in bushes and automobiles. And they were not, it wasn't the typical Skid Row type situation. And from there I worked in L.A. and also out in the Venice Beach area and was part of the homeless organizing team that set up the first tent city back in December of 1984. From there I came back up here where I had lived in the late 70s to finish out my degree. And when I got here, I discovered a very desperate situation with the homeless, and I began working here then on their behalf.
The homeless have sure had quite a bit of coverage lately, comparatively to what most cities are encountering, and even the Chronicle ran an article about the Santa Cruz homeless situation. And one of the main questions that they were asking, at least last week, was, what do the homeless want? Because there's been a lot of organizing on your parts and a lot of political activity, showing up at council meetings and having sleep-ins and sleepwalks. And so people would like to know, what is it you're asking for?
Take it, Brian.
Well, we do want an end to the police harassment. First of all, the homeless get harassed on the mall just every day. Somebody is thrown into the car, handcuffed, thrown into the car for nothing. And the joke is that the jail is becoming the shelter that city council doesn't want us to have. And also, we want an end to the camping ban. We don't want people stalking around in the woods trying to find us when we're already asleep. We want a legally designated camping area, and there are many places that we could have this. And also we want a little understanding that the homeless aren't just the street people downtown, that there are many people with jobs who live in their cars, or people, you know. People tell us get a job. Well, getting a job is not the end of being homeless. You know, you can't just get a job and move in overnight in this town. And we'd like city council really to end the misinformation drive that they're putting over, you know, towards the public. They're trying to assure the public that everything is being done, and they just keep giving misinformation about the issue.
Well, the city council has claimed that they've done what they can for a small local city government with the resources they have in building a shelter and so forth. You feel there's a lot more that could be done with existing resources?
Definitely, because they spent $600,000 for the shelter, which sleeps 14 people. It's been estimated by some people that, particularly when the students are in town, there may be as many as 2,000 people a night in the city of Santa Cruz alone who do not have shelter. Now, when we talk about, rescinding the sleeping ban, which it is our understanding, given the legal readings of it, that it's unconstitutional the way it's now structured. We're actually talking about saving money. city and county taxpayers, it's costing the city and county taxpayers in somewhere in the area of $1 million a year to enforce the sleeping ban. Plus, it's also recycling homeless people back into town. They get tickets, they go to warrants, they leave town, they're picked up in other towns, brought back here, put in jail here, and then released back out on the mall. This happens continuously. And so it's a lame excuse to keep saying they can't afford to do anything, because what's being asked that they do in rescinding the camping ban or set up designated camping parking areas is actually going to be a saving.
What is their rationale for resisting that kind of move?
That's been asked a million times of me, and I don't really know. They say the residents don't want it rescinded. I personally believe, as do a lot of the other advocates, Paige Smith included, that it's actually the mall merchants who have said they don't want it. We recently set up a dialogue between some of the people in the street community and some of the merchants on the mall, and we didn't get that feeling at all. So I'm just not quite sure who is stonewalling on the issue. And it may well be that if it is the residents, they may be reading the residents wrong, too. I mean, this council has done this in the past. They, mistook what the people are really saying.
Well, I can understand how some people living in neighborhoods might not want a lot of vehicles parked in front of their house or people going to the bathroom in the bushes or whatever, but it seems like a designated campground is a solution to get those people out of neighborhoods if that's the city's main concern.
I would agree with that. There are trespassing laws that would protect private property. Now, if the community really wants to maintain some kind of a camping ban, then I think what we need to do is to look towards a parking area and some campgrounds that would be designated sleeping zones. Because right now, they're saying you cannot sleep between the hours of 11 o'clock at night and 8:30 the next morning, unless you're inside a residential building. And, I think residents, even homeowners, need to look at that real seriously. I mean, that's really an infringement of people's rights, because even though you're a homeowner, you cannot take a nap in your front yard or your driveway. You're in violation of that camping ban, even if you own the property you own.
Or say you have out-of-town guests and you'd like to set up a tent in your backyard, that's illegal too?
Now, in the backyard, behind a board fence, it's my understanding it is not illegal. At the same time, we recently had a couple of teenage girls who were up on the roof watching some kind of stars or some sort of an eclipse or something, had sleeping bags out, and they were in violation of the camping ban, and the police came, and they were on their parents' home.
So what kind of arrests or fines do people face if they're not found sleeping in public?
Okay. Brian, is it correct they started $85?
Pretty well $50 to $125 fine, and many of these people are indigent. They simply don't have much money, and then it gets into community service hours. And
do they have warrants put out for their arrest?
If you don't appear for your court date, then it's a warrant, and a lot of these people... some people get camping tickets, are backpacking through town, just wanted to stay for a while and don't really want to stick around for the trial or the appearance.
Right.
And so when they come back, they're under warrant then.
Yeah, I saw a person sleeping in front of the Togo's right in the flower pot today around 11, and apparently later on a friend of mine did see a cop come by and give this man a ticket. Now, he had a winter coat on and he looked like he had a hard night and he was glad to be getting some sleep, but doubtful he's got $50 in his pocket.
Yeah.
But ultimately, some of these people end up in jail.
They do, and as I said before, one of the things we discovered is that they leave town and they're picked up somewhere else, and then we pay to have them brought back. They sit in jail, and then when they're released, they're put back out, and they usually go back to the mall area.
So you're suggesting that it would just be more cost-effective as well as humane to maybe use some of those resources in serving people instead
of
harassing them?
Exactly, right. I mean, it was that... it's not going to cost any money. We're going to be saving money by, either rescinding it or bringing it into constitutional compliance, because the way you would bring it into constitutional compliance is by setting up the designated zones.
Some critics of this, though, do say that if we have a campground in Santa Cruz, that it's, first of all, I don't know if this is true. Would this be the only one in California, or is there one in Santa Barbara at this point?
The situation in Santa Barbara is similar to what we have in the county, you know, where there, you don't have everything, there's not just a blanket sleeping ban. That's what makes this unconstitutional, because you're preventing people from sleeping. And I think your question is it going to draw in?
Well, that's what I was getting
people
to.
Right.
That's what some
right.
people
Of course, we have no way of knowing that. I don't think it will. In San Francisco, Santa Cruz has a bad reputation. It's no secret all the brutality that's going on towards the homeless here. And I don't see that at all. I mean, we don't really even have a truly viable soup kitchen here anymore, because Peter, and I have a lot of respect for Peter and the work he's done, but for whatever reason, he's become very selective about who he serves and who he doesn't. So I don't foresee some great influx. I mean, this certainly hasn't happened with our shelter. We don't have that many beds anyway. But there's a big homeless problem in San Jose, and they don't seem to be flooding over the hill here.
Well, what do you have a vision for a campground, that how it would be, say, regulated in some way? I mean, there's probably going to be an X amount of spots, and maybe some people are going to have to be turned away, and others are going to have to be accepted. And have you thought about that?
Yeah, I have. Actually, I've been passing out diagrams of campgrounds for 4 years, but that we've set up, and it's both a combination of parking and campsites, tent sites. And we originally did that diagram with the idea in mind of Sycamore Grove, which is off Highway 9. And I still haven't ruled that out. That's part of the Pogonet property, although I do understand that City Council is looking at more of an RV park, which would probably be priced out of the range of the homeless. I personally have selected more or less three sites. And I don't think we should have one mass campground. I foresee some difficulties with that. The first site is the Greyhound Rock, which is north of the city. It's already being used by some of the Rainbow groups in return for picking up the trash on the beach. And I'd like to see a firm arrangement made to where some homeless, or not large amounts, could use that in reciprocal for either doing to contain the trash, or there's also a great deal of repair work that needs to be done due to the 82 storm damage, and the county has just gotten the funds for that. The second site, and this one's kind of up in the air, but it would be more of an urban site, and I haven't ruled out the university as a possible site. There's also the Sycamore Grove area, or we might have a couple designated sites that would be in some of our parks. And the third one is to set up in conjunction with a water harvest project on the city's 72 acres out in Ziani. They own 72 acres, which they originally bought for a dam. And I'd like to see the springs. There's some very good springs out there, and I'd like to see them, worked, mined, and also to see some wells sunk on that property to help with the drought and, some minor growth. I'm not talking about major growth. And then the people who would monitor this would be some of the Rainbow family, who are very environmentally concerned and would also have a campground there.
About these various sites, probably most of the homeless people would probably be interested in an urban campsite, just because it's near opportunities for either public services or for job opportunities and so forth. Now, the city, through Prop 70, just got the money to buy the Pogonet property. Does that include Sycamore Grove, where the city owns that now?
My understanding, it does include Sycamore Grove, yes.
Because people have been camping up in that area for years and years.
Yes, they have.
And it seems like it's out of people's neighborhoods and so forth, so that would probably be a pretty optimal site.
Right. There's a restricted, you can't camp just beyond that in what they call the Ocean Street Extension. That was the one and only site that a hearing was held on in regards to the county's camping ban, which was passed in 85. but the Sycamore Grove, at least it's my understanding, according to Joe Kachera, is exempt from that, and so could be used as a camping ground.
Uh-huh. Well, I understand with the county's ban is, like most areas in the county, they don't specifically ban sleeping, and yet there is a harassment of sleeping people by deputy sheriffs.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the sheriff gives you mixed messages if you call up. Sometimes, depending on what the kind of mood they're in, they'll tell you the only place to sleep in town is, an RV park where you pay, or a state park. But here again, is out of the range of most of the homeless. Plus, there's the other factor is that I think they now either have a 7 or 14 day limit where you can stay. This doesn't solve anything. I wouldn't rule out at all the possibility of using some section of a state park in this county either, since we have such an abundance of them.
Uh-huh. Have you talked to the state parks people?
I talked to the state parks people quite extensively back in 85, because we were trying to get them to keep them from shutting down the Henry Cow campground. They were going to shut that down, and we had a number of women and children up in that area. We were successful with the help of Henry Mello and Jack Hillis and a few people like that. We haven't talked to them since then, but the homeless problem has certainly grown even greater in the ensuing years.
In Henry Cow, those people were paying, though, to stay there, weren't they, overnight?
Yes, they were. They were, but it was considerably less then than it is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They changed. I know they upped their rates like by twice. But this campground would be free of charge.
Right, and it would be, what we had envisioned was something that is going to be very nominal in any kind of cost to the city or county. It would just, and it would be, actually, as I said before, it would be a greater savings in not having to pay all this money out for putting people in jail and chasing them around the country, bringing them back here. And the initial diagram we drew up, it would be monitored by both homeless and university interns.
Now, a few years back, Jane, you undertook a hunger strike in order to prod local officials to, deal with the homeless problem. And do you feel you accomplished much, or they built a shelter? Was that what you wanted at the time?
Well, when we started out here, what we were asking for were cold and rainy night shelters using public buildings and campgrounds, because the predominant thing that the homeless in this area said, look, we're not into going inside buildings unless the weather is just absolutely miserable, and we'd much prefer a campground. We even did a real property inventory of the county's holdings to determine what lands were available for campgrounds, and they began to systematically sell those lands off after we pointed out where they were. But so as time went on, they said, we don't talk to us about campgrounds at all. They also at that point were not interested in even doing any kind of sheltering, because they kept saying the community's not ready for that yet. So yes, the first hunger strike forced them to open the first city-county shelter. Then we had to go back and, along with some other people, do it again 1 year later to get back into another temporary shelter. And then at that same point, in the meantime, negotiations had come and gone with the university. The city kept trying to say the university was stonewalling on it. As it turned out, it was actually the city who was the problem. It was not the university at all. And so we... It was university owned land, but it was the city who had actually decided they didn't want to buy it, and they kept blaming it on the university. But it was actually the city that was doing this. But I, along with a number of other activists, Linda LeMaster, Shannon Cassano, Linda also did the first hunger strike, were not at all pleased about the River Street site, because we were afraid two things. One, it was too much money for the number of people it was going to shelter. And two, it really wasn't addressing, we were going to be co-ops, because we got the shelter and we hadn't touched the sleeping ban, which we believe is the crux of the homeless problem in this county. Then, what they were going to say is precisely what they've done. We've done all we can for them. And we felt like, we were selling out. Unfortunately, we got. Unfortunately. I don't want to badmouth the River Street Shelter. They do good work. It'll be even better when they get a kitchen. Believe it or not, that much money's been spent, and they don't even have a kitchen, and they get more beds. So I think, it's only a drop in the bucket, and we have to do something else. Well, obviously, we don't have beds for 2,000 people or whatever. So we need to do, whatever we can do for the minimum. We'll take care of the maximum number of people for the minimum amount of cost.
This last week, I was reading in the Sentinel, I believe, John Laird, and I had a quote that basically said he didn't have a lot of sympathy for people who chose to live on the street or chose to be homeless. That basically his attitude and maybe some of other people in the community are that there are people out there who basically want free land. I believe the line was free land for their lifestyles, and that was Chief Bassett, I believe, that said that. So what do you want to address that?
Well, and when I first became homeless, it was April 1st, and I had so much money, and it was really a choice between getting a place to live or having money to eat, and I chose to have money to eat. And I made the mistake last year of making enough money to pay taxes, and I don't like what the government does, and I don't want to make that mistake again, to make so much money that I have to pay federal taxes. As long as they continue with their policies towards Central America, I'd rather starve than pay taxes right now.
Yeah, you can always get something off the books, possibly.
Yeah. No, I eat bread on the streets. That's what the homeless do. We eat bread on the streets. We know what the U.S. government is doing, a lot of us, and we're simply not going to put up with it or support it.
And what would you say, though, still about that, that argument that some of the people out there could have a place to live?
Well, a lot of the people on the streets do work and, have jobs and get money, but in this town you have to have $1,000 to get a room, mm-hmm. and everybody knows it. And a lot of people get SSI or disability payments, and they get several hundred dollars a month. But that's just enough, you can get a hotel room for $150 a week. Well, then they can sleep in a room for 2 weeks, maybe, 2 weeks out of the month. But it's hard to get enough money, to meet the down payment and everything and actually get into the room when you're starting at a level of little money and just beginning a job.
So the homeless issue can tie into other political issues, therefore. I mean, you mentioned Central America, but there's, on a local level, too, there's the rents in Santa Cruz, just what it costs to live here, and there's no rent control, nothing on the ballot. As a matter of fact, the ballot measure that's on there is to even take rent control away from RV, mobile home renters.
Uh-huh.
And, unemployment. Underemployment, in this country.
Yeah, well, the legal camping spaces that there are in the state parks would cost you $360 a month right now to move into, and then there's a regulation that you could only stay 30 days during 1 year, that you can only stay 7 days at one time. Mm-hmm. When homeless people do get money, they do. It's easy. When a homeless person gets $100, it can last like 3 days if you're going to get a hotel room,
We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to take a brief musical break. We also should talk about just what, has been going on, what kind of organizing you've been doing, because there's been a lot of activity and you've got a lot of attention. So we want to talk about that and more. We might even have time for some phone calls. And we're going to first play Bob Marley.
Okay. You're listening to KZSC Santa Cruz.
Thank you. Thank you.
Get up, don't give up the fight.